Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the October 31 edition of Commodity Week. Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Dale Durkholz of Grain Cycles. He is out of Bloomington, Normal, Illinois. Let's start with this question for the day, Kurt Kimmel. Basis has been strong both for corn and soybeans. Farmers are very delayed with their harvest season. What should they do with the crop that they now have to take across the scale at this time?
That's a great question, because we've come up with the saying, should I store or should I sell? And that's the main conversation. What we've been finding is it depends what area, what the bids are. Then also, too, do you have late June corn or not? There's a lot of cases where guys have used their bin space to put beans in, and if they got June corn, they're going to take the June corn to town and sell and get rid of it and cash in, so they don't have to worry about the quality. But majority of guys are going to fill the bins if they got bin space. Very rarely have I had a guy not fill a bin. But the thing is, with these strong corn bids, we've had a lot of activity moving the corn across the scale, taking advantage of these early bids and replace it. The front end's firm. Option volatility is low. You can buy in the money call and only pay 4 or 5 cent premium.
Dale Durkholz, your assessment?
You know, my bias at this point in time with beans that I've got yet to harvest, you know, do I bin them or do I push them across the scale? I would really be more inclined, especially if we can get a little bit of a bounce out of some of this weather system here, to push them across the scale, because when I start listening to what farmers tell me about bean yields, I'm starting to develop a little bit of a worry that the USDA might be just a smidgen low. And if people start looking for a low ball number in November, we could get a bit of a negative surprise. So I'm a little careful about that. So I look at timing factors as well, and they still tend to point me down sometime into late January. So if I'm going to hold beans, it's a long haul process.
And Dwayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, we think if you're in the area that's got that 20-30 over basis, it's a no-brainer. You sell the corn, you take the money. If you want to buy them, that's going to put you over $4. If you want to just bank that, prepay some stuff, that's great. If you want to re-own, Kurt said it, you can go clear out to wherever you want to go to. I mean, we went out to March, we went out to May, we went out to July, depending on how much and what you want to give for it like that. But I said, this basis, let's face it, if we're 30 over and we're generally 30 under, there's 60 cents carry already compared to what you were going to get. Take advantage of it, sell some corn at these basis levels.
Let's deal with some of the cycles at this point. Where do you think we stand, and what are some of the upside and downside objectives?
You know, when I start looking at the cycles, corn and beans in particular, it's interesting. They're a little bit out of sync, which they tend to be because of their different lengths in that 40 and 32 week in beans. But they both tend to come into play somewhere about late January, maybe on into February, with corn coming a little bit after it at that point in time. And to me, that tells me whatever strength I get along with weather in here, I've got to be real careful about. And there is some downside risk as I go forward, as those price cycles start pulling some movement back to the downside in prices. The other thing in corn and beans, to a lesser degree, I've got in 2020 long-term cycles, so I tend to start playing a little bit of defense here at this point on strength, worried about those long-term, and I'm talking a 5.5 year in corn, actually having downside risk. I don't think it's coming anywhere this winter, but when I get into next summer, so I tend to be a little bit more negative in the long haul, and that tends to make me a little bit more biased to wanting to watch for tops instead of looking for bottoms to buy.
Well, the little shorter term here is a little hope that the beans have been doing a 4 to 8 week cycle. We're due for a little 4 week cycle for maybe a little recovery, and here the corn has been working in a little shorter term, 7 week. But that will give us some opportunity to see recovery. But longer term, the longer term risk is to the downside. And that's why we kind of like moving the cash grain in through here, getting your money. There's an old saying, buy option, don't worry, you know, because you know exactly where you are. You've got your money. The thing is, on the corn chart, December corn chart, it's got your wife's wedding ring on there. It's formed a diamond formation. And a diamond formation is very, very rare. And those happen very seldom. And it is kind of a market mover when that happens. So we can see a movement as much as 24 cents here if you're not careful.
To the upside or to the downside?
Oftentimes, when you have these diamond formations, you have a fake breakout. It broke out to the downside here, so I hope it's a fake breakout, and we can come back up and rally 24 cents real quick.
Yeah, be sure not to tell my wife about that diamond formation, because we'll be looking for something really soon if that is the case. Now, Wayne Nelson, let's talk a little bit about what the outside influences look like at this point. Of course, we have the inquiries happening in Washington, D.C. We have the Chinese trade negotiations happening. We have a very late South American crop getting started. That could have an impact on the condition of corn crop for the safrinha or second crop, and USMCA as trade as well.
Yeah, and I think the biggest one that we have to, you know, write all of our congressmen about it, says get this USMCA thing taken care of. That is very, very, very important. That is the biggest thing we got going right now, and it seems to go to the back burner. You know, we see rumors every day. They called off the conference in Chile. Well, that was a big deal because everybody thought, oh, they can't meet. And if he goes there, that shows weakness. If they come here, that shows weakness on their part. So, but then Trump later in the day said, well, we're going to meet somewhere. We haven't just decided where yet. Our planes can fly and meet. So that was a good thing. You know, we come back at the end of the day. We've got a lot of weather to get through. The USDA, you know, the non-ripe or non-mature crops, they were still giving them 100% chance of making it and whatever. I'm seeing snow today. I've talked to a lot of customers. They're seeing 3 inches of snow today. And I'm finding late crops aren't going to make full what they're looking at there. We're going to see FC Stone. We're going to see Informa come out between Friday and Monday and see what they're really thinking about it. But the way that they came up on the crop ratings on this Monday, very scary to me that we're going to see any cutback as far as their decision of yield. You know, a lot of us out here in the field, a lot of us have been elevator people, talk to these farmers all the time. This crop is not what the government is projecting it to be because we have come down a lot. I think they got the acres too high. So I think it's going to be less. But I think that is one of the biggest things we're looking at. South American weather, big, 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 big thing. The biggest thing supposedly holding up the China deal is that they want to say, we'll buy if needed and if you're competitive. That's a sticking point with Trump.
So the USDA will release the crop production report on the 8th day of November. That's a Friday. Next week, they will, along with the yield survey of farmers in North Dakota, ask them, have your harvest acreage numbers changed? Do you think we'll see very much out of that?
You know, the one thing I look at in beans, I don't see any huge changes. Maybe the harvested acreage numbers could go down a little bit. Every month they do ask a question that relates to harvested acreage on corn and beans both. But the corn number, when you start looking at the raw data for the national itself, you know, you get the feeling that maybe they're about a half million acres too high at this point yet. But, you know, there we're talking about 80 million bushels worth of production. When I look at the breakdown in terms of yield, whether we look at corn or whether we look at beans, it to me looks like, you know, the kind of path that we're on. We're going to see corn in particular, those yield numbers go down a little bit from 168.4, and I think eventually could end up around 165. But November is going to be defining because there we're going to really get our first, what I'm going to call, serious farmer input into that process, because they will have harvested enough crop to have a sense of what their yields are going to be. So I'm a little bit biased that we'll go down maybe a little under 167 on corn, the beans. I want to say they're going to go down a little bit from that 46.9, but the more I hear and read and talk to a few people, even one guy in Ohio that had a huge amount of prevent plant, and that tells you how late his planting was, he was shocked at his bean yields. They were that good. You know, and they were much better than he expected. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, if we're set up for a little bit of a negative surprise on bean yields, depending on where the trade looks for. The numbers, though, when you look at pod counts, pod weights, you know, implied pod weights, they tell me, you know, we ought to go down a little bit, but I'm not certain about that. But South America, Wayne had mentioned it. You know, and we're 65% done up in with bean planting in Mato Grosso now, 65% done down in Paranon. That's actually not bad at this point, a little bit behind in some other areas. So, you know, I'm kind of thinking we've passed already any kind of early South American weather scare, so that may be coming a little bit later if it does.
You talked a great deal about yield. Do you not think acreage will change very much?
On beans, I don't think it will a whole lot. On corn, like I said, I can lose a half a million acres off my harvested acreage number, and I look at it a little different because I take out a silage number and then figure abandonment.
And what do you think those numbers will look like then at the January report?
The January, I haven't thought so much about. That's 3 months away yet, or four. But I'm still thinking, you know, somewhere down in the mid-81s on harvested acreage and probably pulling a yield about 165. Don't remember the production number off my head.
So you're down a million acres then?
It's about a half million, mid-81s.
You're only taking your stuff out.
Because you've already taken part of the silage number out. So acreage not expected to change. The farmers still have a very difficult time. When I'm out, and I don't know about you, this is the number I still get asked about. They don't believe it. Well, they don't believe, frankly, the yield number very well either, but I think they're coming around to that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you have the headlines say, major snowstorm, we're going to come in and ask harvested acres, just right when you had the snowstorm. Well, they haven't even started harvesting in some areas, and farmers just don't give up. I mean, the harvested acres, if it's harvestable, he's going to harvest it, and we'll see how that comes out. The thing is, even the people in the know don't know. For example, you take the Prevent plant, you plant corn on it, and they'll coat it as grass. You could plant soybeans on it, and they coat it as legume, okay? Now, you got a satellite coming over taking pictures of that. Does that satellite know if that's Prevent plant, cover crop or not? So there's a lot of moving things in here, and we'll never know these acres for sure, but when I drive around and see these holes out here, harvested acres are going to have to come down.
So USDA will say we count a corn acre as a corn acre no matter what, and then we take the survey of the farmer. The farmer tells us what that corn acre was supposed to do, whether it's supposed to be harvested, whether it's silage, or whether, in this case, this year, it could have been Prevent plant. So they say they capture it, not in the planted acreage number, but they get the correct number when they get back down to the harvested acreage figure. Now, let's talk about bins and what producers ought to be thinking about the grain they have or will put in the bin. How long are they going to be able to wait this year with that? Expectations, do they need to hold it all the way through to July? The marketplace doesn't actually tell them that in at least corn at this point.
Well, I think they need to look and see what their bids are for further out to see how they're looking and look at the spreads, see how they're doing. You know, that's one of the reasons when we first round of questions here was we were saying sell your excess grain that you're going to need for your first 3 months of cash flow because you're probably not going to get a better basis than that. We also remember it's the last half of grain when the bins get full is when the farmer sells. We don't think the basis level is going to hold up and after we get going again if we can get back in the field full bore because there will be some corn moving to town. They won't have to pay this 20 and 30 over for the corn and that way. Now, I could be all wrong if this is drawn out and there's snow here, snow there, just a little bit every day. But the fact of the matter is, how often have we seen these basis levels at this time of year? I've been in the grain business since 1974, and I can only remember about one other time, I think it was 2012, that they had, and that was the short crop. And other than that, we have never paid these kind of basis levels over like that. I think if you look at, we look at the beans and some of those going out to July, they've got a nice carry. We've got to remember, and you might want to be pricing some of that in because we're going to see how South America is getting along by that point in time. We're going to see by July or even in May what we're going to sort of plant for our bean crop. And we've got a whole bunch more acres that should be available to be planted this coming year. That's why a lot of the advisory firms, myself included, are saying a little 2020 crop probably isn't bad to have hedged because with if we don't have another year like this year, we're going to plant another 10 to 15 million acres. We could, as he said, 20, but I mean, we're going to plant at least 15 million more acres unless something really, really goes bad. So I'm looking ahead and saying a little 2020 is probably better than worrying about exactly other things, but I do want to take advantage of the good basis levels here at Harvest.
Okay, so I need to know from each of you, and I'll start, Wayne, with you, on how they take advantage of this basis. What should they do for both commercial storage, because they'll probably have to haul something in town, and or for the bin?
Well, commercial storage at the price you pay in the basis we have now, not a good deal. You take that basis level and you go on. You take that, you can go out, you can buy some deferred futures. You can see what the spreads are and try to do that and play that a little bit. But basically along the line, like we had a guy early, he was 30 over for corn and he's generally 20 under. We sold the corn, we took it, we went out and we bought a 10 cent in the money July call, and he's still got 10 over for his corn now, and he was still in good shape. Now, that's what we're looking at doing in cases that way, with no risk to him, but yet he can hold it.
I agree on commercial storage for corn. I'd move it and replace it. Do your own basis in a sense, because what some people are doing are doing basis contract to elevator, and they get 60-70% of the money and still think they own the grain and have some upside advantage. But once you just sell, get 100% of your money and re-own it yourself one way or other. Whereas beans is maybe a little different stories for bin beans. If you got a bin, put them in the bin, then hedge the July. There's 60-70 cents carry there. Don't put them in the bin and set on them. If you do that, buy a put, but you can actually do a hedge and be your own elevator and collect the carry there.
You know, it's kind of a weird environment because we do have some of these good harvest basis levels this year and we got to deal with it. But at the same time, when we step back into it, we've also got to recognize what Kurt talked about in the carry, even in the corn. Once you get out to March, May, I'm sitting here at about, 8 cents or something like that, And so I'm sitting out there with some good carry in the corn market or decent carry in the corn market. And selling the cash and buying out in the distance doesn't always work in that environment very easily. So it tells me I try to keep my re-ownership up in the front end of the game, especially at this point. But I would be more inclined to want to think, I'm looking at the good basis. I want to sell the cash on these bushels. And I frankly would rather be patient and not replace it until I get into those lows coming somewhere out in there in the Jan-Feb time period, and then try to re-own it at that point depending on what's going on. And that may be a short-term re-ownership because I've got these long-term cycles, 5.5 year in corn, 2 year in beans that point me down into later 2020. And that says owning stuff, not a good idea.
Turn your attention to the 2020 crop now. Should producers be thinking about pricing any of that out?
Yeah, I think we need to really start at it at this point in time. I wouldn't be bashful. We've had, and I don't know where we closed out here as we're recording this, but we've been in the 960, 970 November beans and corn. We've played around at different times over four. Why not? Why not start playing around with getting some stuff on the books? Because we're probably sitting there with those long-term cycles saying, we're talking corn in the low threes, maybe corn back or beans back down against eight again.
Yeah, it worked last year. And I think it's got to be a hedge because the new crop basis is wide. So you got to check that out and keep an eye on a hedge. And it worked last year. You can put on a bull call spread, buy a $4, sell a $4.50 or whatever, but hedge, go short the board around $4 and it's covered. So a covered hedge to give you some staying power.
Well, there was two advisory firms on Thursday that went ahead and did pop off some sales. Some of them are in between 20 and 40% sold in the 405 to 408 mark right there. I agree that at least 25% should probably be sold at that level out there. A hedge put on, a good thought. Basically along the way, if things start to take off, we have a hedge. We know how to take it off.
Let's talk about the demand side of the market just a little bit, maybe the livestock, certainly the ethanol, and the exports.
Boy, you look at the livestock, it's kind of like a big question mark at this point because, like in the soybeans, we're all looking at, what's China going to do? And I don't know. The one thing I look at when I look at hog futures, to me, they're a little bit overpriced, and the market's not performing as well. So demand base as far as grains are concerned into the livestock business here is going to be pretty strong, pretty robust. But I don't know what the pork demand base is going out the door, so we got to be careful about that. When I look at ethanol, a lot of cry out there right now about, you know, the new game with RFS, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we can go on down the whole list. I think there's going to be a lot of political pushback, and I think we're going to get some things resolved there. So I think ethanol, you know, as far as corn grind concerned, I think it's going to show some strength. Corn demand, and when I look at the export market, I don't see anything to get excited about. It's struggling. But you know what I see in corn demand in the export sector and wheat demand in the export sector? We're going to, again, a back-end loaded game. So I think as we get on late winter into spring, they're going to be better than what we're seeing today. So we may be soft here for over the next 2 to 3 months, but I think once we get beyond that and we get rid of the Eastern European stuff, we get rid of some of the quote-unquote late South American stuff, I think that'll be good again as we go forward. And wheat, we got to remember, Australia's got another dismal wheat crop again, and that's going to work in our favor.
Yeah, true feed demand. Feed demand is a miscellaneous category, but true feed demand, it's huge. It's strong. The bear's talking about export. Well, you can't export if you don't have it in the shipping channels, and corn harvest just got going in through here. Corn export news usually kicks in January through March, as soon as we get the beans well on their way. So I think demand's better than what they're letting on.
So I have a different kind of question, and I don't know which one of you will want to take this up. As the Brazilians were coming up as a producer of soybeans, the marketplace in the United States had a difficult time adjusting to the every 6 month supply and trying to get that into their system. Have we restructured again the supply or demand side of the marketplace over the last 18 months? And is that causing a problem within the marketplace for distribution and for producers trying to make decisions?
Corn or beans or both?
I'm not so certain that it's not both.
It is both. And I have a six-month S&D I have for the four major exporter of beans, and it's one that I'm working on right now, trying to get it up to date, get some things streamlined in it at this point in time. But you have to really sit back and work at that at this point, you know, and that's why some of these cyclic games going on really kind of play into the mix. You know, Brazilian bean planting after starting struggling early has really kind of picked up the pace. So early weather problems have been put behind, and so unless weather really changes somewhere and dries out, you know, we're going to see a little defensive pressure here at this point in time in the marketplace itself. And as long as that happens, that says we can plant that second Brazilian crop in corn relatively timely, and so that'll play into the corn market as we go forward. Then meanwhile, we're fighting corn coming out of Ukraine, and we got a bigger corn crop in Europe too. And so we're going to be fighting in the export market for shares at this point. And to me, it's a little defensive. I think we have to start looking at things in six-month time cycles now. This seasonal basis, it doesn't work anymore.
Are you going to drop the seasonal, the old yearly seasonal basis for corn into a six-month time frame? And if you do, how do you put it in place? I mean, where's the harvest month for the second 6 months? Is that July?
Well, the harvest month for the second 6 months is different depending on the crop for you're talking about. You know, in beans, we're talking about, let's say, Feb, March, you know, for Brazil and Argentina. And we haven't even talked about things going on in Argentina today, and I think people need to start watching that. When I look at corn, you probably step back a little bit further. You get into probably about June, May, June.
There is just a shorter-term seasonal, and that is from the end of harvest till year end. Once a guy pays minimum storage or puts in the bin, it's not moved. But that is a shorter term compared to what Dale was talking about.
One thing that Dale mentioned that we probably should take up is Argentina. They had an election. They have a new president and an old vice president who served as a president. Let's call it, she might not prefer, is that what you're laughing about that? But she, that was in place. The Peronist Party is there. This is the party, we talked about them a whole lot on the radio probably 4 years ago, I would think, just before the last election or whenever that happened, because there was a large tax on both corn and soybeans, around 35%, much larger on corn. And that caused Argentina to plant many more soybean acres in recent times. Will there be a switch back to corn for them? What does the Peronist side say about that potential switch? How does this play into the marketplace? Do we have an idea of what might take place there?
Well, what I've read so far is basically they need money to pay the IMF fund back. They are going to tax things more. They are, if they make it into bean meal and process it there, I think their taxes aren't near as bad. If they ship just beans or they ship just corn, the taxes are very high. So I think that they're going to probably go with beans and go back with processing because of the taxes and whatever, because the peso is so low, they're getting quite a few pesos for their crop, but they're scared. I mean, they pulled their bids, or their offers, not their bids, for out there when they'll give in powers. So I'm going to say the odds were that they will stay a little bit more in the heavier beans than corn.
And bean meal is one of the things that they generally export. And yes, I believe China has made a deal with them recently, or at least opened a hurdle or covered a hurdle that was a problem for the export of bean meal.
Yeah, China's really opened the door and improved plant bean meal coming out of plants in Argentina. But Wayne hit it right in here that, you know, the early take after the election and the change in policy, Macri being put out and the Peronists back in power, you know, the farmers have talked. We're going back to our old production practices. We're going back to monoculture soybeans because they work much better than corn does under the kind of policies they see going forward.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. We'll start with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
There is someone out there or something out there that does not want your position to work. So if you have a position, bullish or bearish, make sure you have some staying power and stick with it. Secondly, I think corn is one gem of a trade.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
You know, one of the biggest things we see out there right now is we don't know what China's doing. We don't know how the market reacts. We don't know what is going to happen with that. But I think the one thing we do know is we've got great basis levels right now. You're never wrong to sell an unusually wide or to your positive basis levels. And then we can figure out how to re-own it if we want to. We don't have to. I mean, if you're selling corn way above $4 and your goal was $4 corn and you can get $4.10, bank it, prepay seed corn.
And Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles.
You know, I'll do a ditto on what Wayne said about strong basis. You never go wrong selling it at any point in time, it seems like. Probably, though, the bigger question I have out there, you know, the preponderance of negative interest rates in Europe and Japan, and what does that say, and even low interest rates here in the U.S., what does that say about what's going on worldwide economically at this point? There's some currents moving in this game that I don't understand, and I keep asking people questions about, and that's something we all ought to understand because it tells us about where we're heading in the future.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go this week to Dale Durkles, along with Wayne Nelson and Kurt Kimmel. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.